Hi, how's business?
How's business?
How's business? Welcome to How's Business, a podcast on what it's like to do business in the city of Chicago, created by the Institute for Justice Clinic on Entrepreneurship. Today on How's Business, we're welcoming the founder of Latent Design and Boombox. Latent Design was founded in Wicker Park, and there are Boombox locations in a growing number of Chicago neighborhoods, including Wicker Park, Austin, Chatham, Englewood, Bronzeville, and the West Loop. Boombox are tiny retail locations built from shipping containers. You just start with the basics if you want to tell me your name and the name of your business.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Catherine Darnstadt. I have several businesses. One of them is Latent Design. It's an architecture and urban design firm, which is where we're at. And then we also happen to be at the location of the second business, which is Boombox Chicago, which was an initiative that was spun off from Latent Design.
How about you tell me the story of the business, Boombox and Latent, from little seedling to where it is today?
Absolutely. So Latent Design is my architecture and urban design firm. It was founded in 2010. We have a mission of looking at and trying to understand social and spatial equity, right? So we're looking at equity in the built environment, and our projects have ranged from affordable housing, urban design, public spaces, you know, and a variety of building, commercial, residential types. In 2014, we started working on an initiative with the city of Chicago, specifically the Department of Transportation, around public spaces and trying to find ways to revitalize public plazas across the city. As part of that initiative, we proposed an idea of micro retail. Coming from years of work that we had already been doing on commercial corridor plans with various neighborhoods across the city, we kept hearing the same problem come up. You know, how do we support our small businesses? What do we do about our vacant storefronts? What can we do about vacant land? And really looking at building businesses affordably and having that as part of, like, let's find a spatial solution for building and maintaining businesses and bringing smaller businesses, providing them a way to scaffold up. And so we proposed this idea of micro retail to the city as part of this public plaza plan. And they said, this is great. We love it. You know, how do we bring this online and make this live? And, you know, our response was, well, we're pretty sure everything about it is illegal. So that started this year-long journey of understanding and what ultimately ended up working with six different departments because we were illegal from a size standpoint. So every building has a minimum building size in Chicago, and we were just way too small at 150 or 300 square feet that we were proposing. The smallest building you could have is pretty much a garage, right? Which is 400 square feet. Everything underneath that is like a shed or a tent or something else, but it's not a pop-up retail space. So we worked with zoning because there's nothing in the building code for a building, then there's definitely nothing from the zoning code to allow the type of use that we're looking at. We worked with business licensing because there wasn't, you know, a pop-up license at the time. And so how do we look at itinerant or short-term merchants and bring them into the space and license them? We worked with Department of Cultural Affairs because we also saw these spaces as areas where not only businesses could thrive, but artists, small galleries, theatrical and musical performances, all of that could happen, especially in the warm weather months where you have what became a boombox unit is paired with a public plaza. So you could have art and artistic activities in the plaza, in the boombox, all working together. Obviously, the Department of Transportation is the owner of all the plazas. And then I think in the end, we also worked with public health to help regulate and understand food-based businesses.
So that's a really interesting vantage point, because I think a lot of the small business owners that we speak to who are working on something innovative, often the time that they find out that it's illegal is once they're already up and running.
Yes, yeah.
And then that creates a different sort of circumstance for how they navigate with the city to either legalize what they're doing or conform what they're doing to whatever is legal. So can you talk a little bit about how it was different for you to have an idea and get it proved through the city before you're executing on it?
Right. So in the end, the shortest route was writing a new ordinance, which doesn't make any sense when you say it. Right. And we had to go through changing municipal policy to get this structure there. It was the only way to essentially legalize what we were trying to do. And then in turn, by legalizing the space itself, then we could slowly legalize the businesses that were coming into it. We had to create a new process and a new ecosystem for it. The Chamber of Commerce says it's like 47% of all businesses are micro enterprises. And that's a business that kind of exists in this gray economy of making $500,000 or less. But those are businesses that are too risky to go into a storefront and sign a long-term lease, or might not be their full-time business. It's their second business, right? Or their passion project. Those are the businesses we wanted to bring out of the bedrooms, bring out of the kitchen table, bring out of
the shadow economy,
the shadow economy, and bring out of just like the weekend only economy, and put that really at the forefront.
And what animates your interest in creating spaces for these kinds of entrepreneurs?
They're my friends. You know, I mean, that's our business too. Like, our business at various points of when we started up absolutely fit within the micro enterprise when we just look at it from a revenue standpoint. It was coming directly from urban design and requests from communities we were working with to think about new ways to revitalize commercial corridors. So if we live for summer on a day like today, we're living for a summer because it's cold and snowy and, you know, February, when we get to a street festival, we want that business that we see in a tent on a street fest on the weekend. We want that same business to be thriving in a storefront that we pass every day to work on Monday and Friday. So how do we, you know, scaffold those two together? And we also live in a culture that, you know, pride Shark Tank. So we expect a small business to be able to pitch and raise $1 million and then like all of a sudden be everywhere, right? But that's not the reality of how businesses grow and scale. And our commercial space economy and commercial leasing and commercial real estate only like responds to that. You either have to be big or you're not in it.
Right? Yeah, the pipeline is missing.
The pipeline is absolutely missing. So we started to look at this as part of a pipeline issue. So let's create the small, affordable space that could be used temporarily to make a case, build demand, build brand, build revenue, to then go into a storefront. So 2015 was when Wicker Park launched. 2016, we launched Inglewood as a location. 17, we had Austin and Chatham. And then 18, we had Bronzeville and West Loop. Over that course of those years, we've also been kind of slowly pushing commercial real estate to come our way, to make the case to commercial realtors that, you know, instead of a storefront being vacant for 2 years before you find the 5 or 10 year lease tenant you want, you should be opening it up. We've also continued our advocacy within policy because, you know, it's great that we wrote our own policy to attach to the boombox locations, but we wanted it to be more widespread. So we continued to advocate with Business Affairs and Consumer Protection, BACP, and then that was part of the pop-up licensure.
Yeah, so you're maintaining licensing for Latent Design and then for each of these locations. And then I'm sure that you're working closely with the small business owners who are in your spaces to make sure that they're licensed in the way that would protect them in those spaces. Can you talk a little bit about what it's like to maintain licenses in the city of Chicago?
Right. Our professional licensure as architects is at the state level. So we don't actually need city licensing. But when we started in the boombox locations, we had to get licensed completely different than we were used to. So we were kind of like confused, like any new business was, like, what license do we get? Where do we apply for it? Why are we paying? Are we paying twice? Why does it seem like we're paying so much money? You know, all of these things. So we learned through that we get the business license as an umbrella for the location, as a retail location. And then each individual business that comes up, a pop-up business that comes up, we get them a license for the duration of time.
And one thing that we're hearing a lot in media all the time is that business owners are just going to leave Illinois because of all of the pressures that they're experiencing. We wanted to get a sense through these interviews, like, what is your attachment to Chicago? How important is it to you that the businesses that you're starting are located here? And what's the special sauce that that happen?
I was born in Chicago. You know, you just kind of have like this attachment to a city over time. I, you know, lived in other cities previously, but just coming back to Chicago, it feels like home. As that grows, you know, I have a child, goes to our neighborhood school, all these things that just, you just can't imagine leaving. Sometimes maybe a little bit warmer climate might be nice, but, you know, still can't imagine leaving.
Boombox Florida coming soon.
Okay, well, and I think the other thing that I hear from our vendors, so when we talk about success, we have a cultural model of success as Shark Tank, as I mentioned previously, but it's really a success as sustainability. And by that, I mean, we have businesses who are looking for ways to stay in the city. We already know that we've lost 250,000 people, mostly in Black and brown neighborhoods on the West and the South side. We've lost 1 million people over, you know, 2 decades. So we have a declining population overall, and it's impacting neighborhoods of color more than it is the central business district and north sides of the city. And so with that, when we start to look at how businesses hold down and anchor commercial corridors, that's why we have to find more sustainable and more affordable ways for businesses to stay so that we could keep their kids in the schools and keep them those schools open and keep their homes in the neighborhood and then keep those individuals here in Chicago. And so that's where it's like when I talk about ecosystem, it all ties together.
We understand that some people's interest is certainly to grow, but there are also business owners who are going to stay at that small level.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the importance of folks who don't necessarily have the interest in being part of a pipeline, but are entrepreneurs at a smaller revenue level?
Yeah, that's sustainability. We also have to have a very real and larger conversation about what monetary success really looks like. So if you're a craftsperson and you hand make individual goods, whether it's clothing, jewelry, chocolates, some might have a desire to scale and, you know, grow a brand and that's sold in Whole Foods. And that's awesome. And we'll want to be part of that journey. But there's others who's like, you know what, I want to constantly make small batch goods because this is my capacity and that's what I love doing. And once we understand that, then we can start to tailor licensing spaces, revenues, and like right size the business conversation to small businesses. Because right now, realistically, a small business conversation starts at businesses that are making over $500,000. And realistically, for most of the support systems that are in place, it's businesses making over, you know, $5 million. We're only focused on like from the $50,000 in revenue a year to $500,000. And that's an area that we find that there's a majority of people there that are being wildly underserved.
You've already talked a little bit about touching so many parts of City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about what it's like to work with folks in City Hall?
It's been an interesting journey. You always know that there's not as much collaboration between departments naturally as there could be. So what we found and kind of had to step into our role of being conveners, collaborators to literally get people into the same room is a very tough endeavor just in and of itself. But that's a role that we had to understand that we have to take on. We've also been really fortunate to find good partners within each department, someone who understands what you're trying to do and helps you out. And so I think finding the people that are eager and for departments to actually have more of a customer service mentality instead of a political mentality or a municipal mentality has helped a lot.
And so if you were to give City Hall one piece of advice, what would that piece of advice be?
We work in these two different realms, right? So we wear two different hats at all times. We have we're architects and designers hat, and then we are small business advocates and essentially small developers too, because we created this new building type of boombox. And so where it might be more helpful is to look at ways that departments can collaborate more efficiently. We can't just look at one department. It has to be multiple departments working together to resolve some of our issues, because small business owners face at least three different departments in opening a storefront. It's zoning, building, and licensure at a minimum. And then if they are a food-based business, then they're pulling in public health. If they also want to have, you know, sell chocolates during the day, but then have an art event or a gallery opening at night, now all of a sudden you're bringing in the cultural affairs department, right? So it's all of these different things that one business owner will have to face, but the different departments themselves are not necessarily streamlining that process. Or sometimes even aware what the other departments really do. That might be the other one.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go a little off script because I think you're uniquely situated in this particular question. Based on your spaces, I could imagine that you have an interesting relationship with the vacancy tax credit.
The reality is, because of the vacancy tax credit, it's more lucrative to keep it vacant than it is to rent at a price point that is affordable for the vendors.
How does it affect your ability to get customers or your customers' ability to get space once they've grown beyond your
location? It affects
location.
Our customers' ability to get space as they want to grow out of a boombox and temporary location and go to something more permanent. What we're finding is our businesses, if you're renting on the boombox in Austin, you want to stay in Austin. Like, you're committed to your neighborhood. The same way that I'm committed to Chicago, people are committed to their neighborhoods and don't necessarily want to go to a different neighborhood, even if it's Hyde Park or if it's the Loop or things like that. And I find that some of the building owners that have chronically vacant storefronts are less than willing to negotiate, right? So they still want the Loop prices and on the west side or the south side, or they're just completely, you know, delinquent. You know, you might not be able to find them anymore because they're not in Chicago, or it might be held by a trust or a corporation. So how do you actually free up that space starts to become a much more opaque process.
Yeah. If you could think about your experience doing business in the city of Chicago and just give it one word, what would that one word be?
The first thing that comes to mind is hilarious.
Hilarious. Oh, I love that. Tell me more about that.
Yes. It's hilarious on a variety of ways that you can look at it. Hilarious in moments, it can be absolutely ridiculous, this response or the circle you might be going in. So you have to just kind of laugh, you know, hilarious in that way. And then hilarious in the others when it all comes together and you see it work. And it when you find like a groove or a streamlined piece, like it's like, ah, that was easy, you know, and it's more out of pure joy rather than pure frustration that almost makes you crazy. But I think working through Boombox and then working with some of the same people that I've grown it to know in different departments, you know, they're all like really human, mm-hmm. you know, and it's also hilarious in the sense that, you know, like they have good jokes too. And I miss that. And sometimes we forget, you know, we have like the city monolith that you come up against as a business owner. And it's a good reminder that as much as we want them to see us and understand our businesses, we have to kind of humanize them too, mm-hmm. because I really don't think there's a party out there that works within the city who is actively trying to stop business growth. It's about they have to understand where small businesses, especially the small businesses that we work with, are coming from, their constraints. And we have to also understand what it takes to operate business of all scale in the city of Chicago.
Yep.
Yeah. But we have to make more space for these micro enterprises for sure.
Is there anything else that's important for you to share about Boombox Chicago or Latent Design?
Yeah. For Boombox Chicago, we're working on a new prototype of a smaller unit, one that can go be movable and go to multiple locations. So that'll be for rent, hopefully launching in the spring of this year. And we're also continuing to grow the pathway for vendors to own their own boombox. So you could just buy a boombox from us and we could design it, build it, install it. And we've been working really hard with the city planning department, building department to bring those online. So you could continue to rent from us, but you could also just own your own. And this idea that you could own your own storefront and actively rebuild commercial corridors yourself is something that we're really excited about.
Since 1998, the Institute for Justice Clinic on Entrepreneurship has provided free legal assistance, support, and advocacy for low-income entrepreneurs in Chicago. The IJ Clinic also trains University of Chicago law students to be vigorous and creative advocates for entrepreneurs. For more information, visit www.housebusinessshy.com.